what are the concerns? And just as an aside, in the conversation, we could talk about domestic help in people's home, that this the same questions we're asking about a food service place, about a restaurant, a caterer, also is relevant if you have someone helping in your house. So, you know, I know for the many years that we had someone in the house, the first rule we said to the person, and they looked at my wife like she was from Mars, was, you don't cook in my house. I will give you all the food you want. That's not what you're here for. You're here to take care of my kids. Right? You're not cooking. Right? We'll make, you know, cold food. So something to be aware of. Right? So the question of who turned on the fire. Next. Right? The separation of meat and fish. Right? So the first question that the Shulchan Aruch writes that we know because of Sakan and other concerns. Right? So now we have a sauce that I can't pronounce the name of it. Someone can help me. Morshed. Whatever. Someone could pronounce it, right? It's a sauce that's supposed to have fish in it. And sometimes you're going to find an OU fish on it. Sometimes you're going to find an OU plate on it or an arp. Right? The OU's position is that even though the fish may be there, if the amount of fish in there is less than shishim, then it could be labeled OU parve, sakana is not there. So can this sauce go on meat? Then, right, French fries and meat oil. Right? You come to a place in the restaurant and you want to order fish and chips. Right? You have to know how they make their French fries. If they're putting their chicken cutlets, their schnitzel, or frying flaky stuff in the same oil that they're putting the French fries, you can't serve it with fish. Next, as much as it might sound repulsive to any of us, if months don't go by where one of our restaurants doesn't get a request to have a tuna pastrami sandwich, right? We may not like it, but that's a request they get. We tell them you can serve a plate of tuna, you can serve pastrami sandwich. If they choose to put it on there, that's not your problem. You have to serve it separately with separate utensils. And then when you come to a fancy simcha, right? They're going to serve the fish. They're going to serve a fish dinner. So they're going to come to the table and they're going to French serve you the prime rib and they're going to give you the side dishes. But suddenly you notice that when they're coming to bring you the fish, they're bringing the fish on the plate from the kitchen. What's the difference? The difference is they have a separate side in the corner in the kitchen where they're dishing out with separate tongs, clean tongs and side dishes that to make sure that the meat and fish are not getting mixed up. Next. All right, Shiva Chalidei Akum. Now, I was once interviewing for a rabbi position, and one of the questions someone asked me was, what happens if you get a ridiculous call at 11 o'clock at night? Or later. So my father was a rabbi for many years, and he used to answer that call by, "Oh, Rabbi, did I wake you?" No, I had to answer the phone. Right, but on a more serious note, I'm understanding that these type of gatherings in the evenings during the summer are geared towards people whose family are not home for the summer. So, and you're coming home late from work, and now this is your food. What happens if you got it delivered to your house at 10:30 at night from one of the restaurants and the food wasn't sealed and it didn't have, right? And you hadn't eaten since, if you had eaten breakfast, you hadn't eaten since breakfast in the morning, right? Now, this is a pretty important issue, right? So the Shiva Chalidei Akum is food delivered by a non-Jew. Where is it coming from? Right? So this is, it's relevant on both ends. It's relevant on how the restaurant, the caterer, etc. is running their operation, but also it's relevant on how it's delivered to you. Right, so refrigerators with meat, poultry, fish, or cheese. Right, the display cases. Sometimes some of the places will have locks on the display cases because they're going to leave the food there overnight. Some places will take everything downstairs, upstairs, back to the refrigerator, right, to know what they're doing. And then, of course, outgoing deliveries, make sure that they're sealed properly and you can have some type of simon to know where they're coming from. Right, protecting the integrity and kashrus of the food. next is right, not bar not. Our Oreo cookies. Right, now we've moved up now to mega stuff. Right, serious, lots of chocolate, lots of cream. Right, your Haagen-Dazs sorbets, which happen to be dairy equipment, and again, the French fries come up in many different ways. You know, the obvious question for many of us who might be what we call fleischophobe. I don't know what that means. You're fearful of being fleshy. Right, so you can have your coffee and milk. Right, but if you went to a X restaurant and ordered French fries, Am I 6 hours waiting, or am I still? I can't drink my coffee with it, but it's not. But I can still have my milk. It's an hour late, and have my coffee a little later. So this is that. This is the question. Not. What's the Can I have right? Can this be eaten with meat or dairy? What about the fish? Right. These questions are all relevant to this topic. Next is chalav shgegen, parva milk. Right. You have so many different types today. Right, the coffee rich, the portion control. You have the coffee mate, which is actually dairy. Ravilsky's Atzel has a whole halach in it, but we're not saying this publicly. But the coffee mate creamers have sodium caseinate in them, which is a derivative of lactose, which is actual milk. So even though it's called a non dairy creamer, the USDA, the farmers lobbied the USDA to call it non dairy. So In legal terms, it's called non-dairy. In halacha, it's called dairy. So you have to be very careful with some of these. Then you have soy milk, oat milk. I was actually in a restaurant today, and I saw that they were pouring oat milk like into a Fleischer restaurant. I said, well, 1 second, let's just check that. Is it actually part of milk? Baruch Hashem, it is actually part. But you have to be careful. Some of these are labeled OUD. We're very insistent that by our restaurants and caterers that even something that's dairy equipment can't come into a Fleischer restaurant. Because, yeah, we're only serving it with dessert, but I don't know, my wife makes a kugel with a soy milk, which I'm eating with my flay chips on Shabbos. So, you can't have it in this situation. In your house, you want to have the soy milk, and you know that it's only used for, it's dairy equipment, you can do it. But in a place where it can be used both for stuff that's used with flay chip and not only for dessert, then you have to be careful. Right? And the OU tries to be mocked, especially in a flay chip environment, in a trefa environment, that the actual parva creamer actually serves as a portion control. So you can be in some of the fanciest hotels, but when they're serving dessert, they're putting them in the portion control where you see the actual label on top of it to see that it's actually parva. Okay, so now we're going to take some of what we've spoken about and apply it to the back of the page. You want to look at the back of the page, The first part is what to ask about a restaurant that sounds intelligent. So, in the world, you could make a case for something sounding very bad, but you're missing some facts in the story. So, if I came and told you that three goyim had keys to the restaurant right around the corner, right, you would be sufficiently horrified, right? But if I play it out in a different way, right? Who has keys to the store? Who has keys to the gas? Who has keys to the refrigerator? And now I finish the sentence and I say, yes, the three goyim have keys to the store, but the gas is locked at night and all cooking equipment is protected from being used and all the refrigerators and freezers are locked. Right? It's not as bad a story as it sounds, right? So if you only ask the first question, who has keys to the store? Right, and you don't know if they're locking the gas, if they're locking the refrigerators, etc. So you haven't gotten a full picture. But even if they have a key to the store, you have to be sure what's happening with any cleaning crew at night. We had situations many years ago, which is why we do this, is that they found the cleaning crew going to. They found the cleaning crew, two guys who were there overnight. Going to a trefa restaurant, getting themselves some burgers, and then going ahead and heating it up on the grill in the middle of the night. So we have to be careful to protect the cooking equipment. Right. So locking the gas is one way, but there are certain electronic equipment. Amazon makes an amazing thing called a plug lock. You don't have to lock the oven; you can lock the plug into itself. And with a key, and this way they can't cook with it. Next, now since you had a presentation on Monday by Rabbi Goldstein, I'm not touching anything about vegetables. You've been completely educated fully in that part. But that's again, what's your procedure? Now, the question of a store having a mashgiach or not having a mashgiach versus only using vegetables that have hashgacha, right? Those are different approaches that the places take. Well, right, what is the procedure for monitoring the fires in the ovens? We spoke about locking at night. What are you doing? Is there? We won't call it a mashgiach. Is there some type of Shomer Shabbos coverage in the establishment that someone is monitoring that the fires are going on at all? So on the side you have the pilot light. If the pilot light's in the middle, Belsky's Atzal said it's sufficient to cook an egg. Then if that pilot light is on, the Goyim are allowed to adjust the fire. The OU has a mashgiach to meet in all of our food service establishments, and therefore we require that the mashgiach turn on the fire, not just have. But we require the pilots to be working. Right, the convection oven, the modern convection ovens, has an automatic shutoff. That the moment you open the doors, the fire goes out. The fire and the fan go off. And if it stays open for more than 5 to 10 minutes, the temperature in the oven goes below 200 degrees or 75 degrees, whatever the sheer visual of cooking is. And if the non-Jewish chef goes and closes the convection oven and it goes back on, the visual is being done by the non-Jew. All right, so what is the procedure for monitoring the fires and ovens? Next, how should I expect my food to arrive? When you're ordering, right, so here in Brooklyn, I'm sure many of the places deliver. If they deliver, you have to be sure that it's coming from with proper simanim, meat and fish need 2 simanim, cheese and other meat and poultry need 2 simanim, fish and other need 1. But you have to know where it's coming from. I mean, right before Mincha, I got a text from one of my mashgichim that someone having a party in one of the restaurants and ordered a cake from a bakery. It came with the name of the bakery on it. It didn't say who said what hefsher it was. So I asked him, who's hefsher? I don't know. Okay. Get back to me what the hefsher is, then we can talk about what the answer is. But there has to be some way to know where it comes from.
The simen could just be the name of the store.
On the back. No, so
the simen, one simen is the kosher cake.
Right. One well, according to Rebelsky, if the kosher cake is sufficiently adhesive, that could serve the simen move up and be enough. But we generally try and have our places do is tape and then staple the mystique to the tape, which strengthens the adhesive to the tape.
I just saw in Florida that sent me the food. Yeah. I recognized the food, right. That looked like the food that recognized. Yeah. It wasn't sale. I called the store,
right,
and they apologized. They went, the guy with the mashgiach went to check. They have a new person checking, and right. I didn't know.
Right. So the that's a terror. It's not a system.
No, not a system.
No, I'm saying that's no. So Bidi Evid, probably in your situation, you probably can eat it. Right. So the example. Let's go into the French fry case that the OU had in the in today's daily halacha. The question was: you got French fries, wasn't sealed. What do you do now? So many places today send a receipt with the name of the place printed on. Not an old booklet where they just write in it. It's all computerized. So that could be a simon. They wrote there that what happens if they specifically have a certain size of a French fry that they make that's unique, whether it's thin, whether it's thick, whether it's or an onion ring, right? They make those thick onion rings with bread with the batter, and you can recognize where it's coming from. There are certain bakeries that make an artisan bread. That's their bread. No one's making, or Bishaito, H&H bagels, used to make a bigger bagel than most other bakeries. Right? If there's some type of simon that you can tell what it is. Right, so how should I expect my food delivery to arrive? Right, who is responsible for checking the kashrus of all the products? Now, in supermarkets, you know who's doing that. In restaurants, you hope who's doing that, but it's very important because, especially today with the supply chain issues, things are coming not exactly the same that was coming yesterday. Someone has to be very careful. That's why you see the picture of the guy in the supermarket who's packing out the chips. And you have a company that has 3 kosher versions and 40 non-kosher versions. He knows that this chip is good and this is not. That's someone has to be on top of that. On what products are they mafresh challah? So there are many people who are of the belief that you only have to be mafresh challah on challah or bread, right? Cakes, almond, liraka, whatever that is. So you'll find the interesting answers to those type of questions. Right, what's their policy about segregation of meat and fish? How are they doing it? What are they doing? Is it separate ovens? Is it separate utensils, etc.? What's the policy? Side dishes. What are the processes of separating fish and meat? Who checks the eggs? Now, if anyone can guess why I have nail polish on my PowerPoint, you'll have a
blood.
Huh? Custom.
No, blood is right. Yeah.
For blood.
For blood. Right. But why? What's the? No. So one of the systems that we have in a number of places when they're using a lot of eggs is they might train one of the goyim to crack the eggs. Just have to make sure that the guy doesn't have any red nail polish in his pocket. And he's going to, because you give him a couple of dollars and he finds a blood spot, suddenly one day he has 10 blood spots. You kind of start wondering what he's doing with keep everyone up. All right, so who's checking the eggs? What's the system? You have to make sure, you know, we're marked to try to not leave eggs overnight, eggs and onions for the sakana. So you have to be aware of what's going on with that. Next. Now, at a wedding in a hotel, what does the mashgiach have to watch for? So before we go to what? Anytime you're going into a non-kosher environment, 8 out of 10 times, the wait staff and all of the maitre d's, etc., are all working for the hotel. The caterer has no relationship with it, and the hashgacha has no relationship with it. And if the hotel is a union hotel, the waiter could take milk, go pour in someone's cup coffee at the hotel, and you can catch him red-handed, and you can't do anything. So, you know, you have to be very careful in knowing when you go into these places that you have to, you know, keep your eyes open, because you ask a waiter for milk, he's going to get you milk, right? He knows where everything is in the hotel, and that's, you know, you have to be very vigilant in what's going on. So that's something just to keep in mind that you know, when you're going into a non-kosher environment, that's part of the challenge. I check all the waiters' equipment. The waiters have, you know, one of the rules you tell the mashgiach when they're kashering is if you're going to kasher, make sure to kasher more than enough that they not be stuck, because when they're stuck, they know where to find what they need. So you have to make sure to check the waiters' equipment, but also make sure the knives are from the caterer, especially in the carving station. If you're cutting a roast beef or a prime rib, right? If the chef's knife is going to get him 25 slices instead of 21 slices, because he's got the azaya sharpness on his knife, right? When you're serving 600 people, that's 4 or 5 less prime ribs for the caterer to use for the same 600 people. Right? That's real money in the caterer's pocket. So the chef is only as good as his knife. You have to be sure that the knives are marked and they have a simon on it, and you can tell. Right? It says even especially on the carving station, you got to make sure that they have enough and they have what's there. Next, who's turning on the fire on the smorgasbord? Now, 90% of what's being cooked on the smorgasbord is actually already cooked. This is, we have a concept by Shabbos saying bishulach habishul. Once something's already cooked, there's no issue of bishulach. I remember many years ago, we had a caterer come to the OU who had been doing the dinner for the city of Bet El for many years. You know, the dinner was 1,400, 1,500 people, and it grew as the years went on. And we had a pre-meeting with the caterer and his chef, and just to go over, you know, how we're doing it, you know, the first time before we did it. And the chef turns to the mashgiach who's you know, coordinating the catering, and he asked him, who turns on the sternos by the smorgasbord? To which the mashgiach, without batting an eyelash, turns to him and says, you are. And, you know, and all the hot boxes. And he looked for a second and said, 90% of what you're putting in, almost everything you're putting in there is already cooked. Anything that's not cooked, I will turn it on. But if something goes wrong, you're going to blame me. You're talking about 30 hot boxes and 30, you know, and how many chafing dishes that they're putting everything in. You got to make sure that it's in. At the same time, if they're making eggs, if they're making crepes, they're making certain things that are raw and they're making it then and there, you have to make sure that you're turning that off. Right? What is the procedure? We spoke about the segregating fish and meat, the cutting boards, the side dishes. Right? That's why they plate it in the kitchen and bring you your plate. Make sure all margarine is powdered. If a caterer does, you know, fancy margarine rosette, and that, you have to make sure that it's a different shape for powder and a different shape for milk. They don't just do the same thing. Because then you're gonna get mixed up in with that. Right? Who are the waiters and the chefs at the event? That was my opening line about the catering events. Who's going to be the one who's the waiter, who's the chef? Right? You have to know. Is it the union staff, or is it the hotel, or is it the caterer's staff? Is the chef from you, is the chef a non-Jew? Who is supplying the alcohol and the drinks? Often when a caterer is catering in a non-kosher environment where they have a bar, the bar is coming from the venue. They're the ones who are going to go and serve it. So you have to be very careful. And you know, each hashgacha has their rules, what they do allow, what they don't allow. And people like to have their single malts, especially the ones that Cherry Castle doesn't allow. Other ABC, so you have to be very careful. And you have to be very careful with party planners. If there's anyone here who does that for a living, I apologize, but I don't like any party planners. So nothing personal. It is personal, but whatever. I've had too many stories and too many things. I know in a certain community south of here, they were dealing with a very serious issue of a parlor meeting on a Motsu Shabbos where they were serving sushi. And sushi came from a tray for sushi place, which was ordered by the party planner. It's just the party planner doesn't have hashgacha and has a reputation to keep, and does not have any necessary anyone that they have to answer to. They just have to do better than they did the last time, and that's something to be careful. At a maisa in a hotel, a wedding for about 700 people. So if you understand, the price tag of the wedding was somewhere in the $1.5 million range, without exaggerating. The caterer's cost was about $250,000. So somewhere in that $1.25 million in between was from the party planner. So we had a situation where the head mashgiach went through the liquor room, and they went ahead and they took out all the Macallan scotch that single malt was made in sherry casks, and he put it in a different room, and they weren't using it. He went to check the bar there, and he sees one of the bartenders reaching under a tablecloth and pouring a drink. What's that? They took the Macallan out. The party planner told the beverage manager, you better put it out if you know what's good for you, wanting a paper. Right? So you have to be very careful. It's a big challenge. How yakish is 9 o'clock? I can finish the job. I can finish. Okay, no, I just don't want to.
We don't stone anymore.
Okay. No, I have a few more pages, a few more slides. Just one I want to try to finish. All right, Shabbos Kiddush. Right, dry food, cooked food. All right, what about congealed liquid? Are you allowed to reheat that on Shabbos? How are they reheating it? Right, there are a few options for reheating food. You put a GI pan on top of a blef, and you fill that with water, and then put a sheet pan over it and heat a hot plate, or the shelf above the stove. So the three options, or you put the stuff in before Shabbos, but that would be for Shabbos more. Right, where are the challah, the baked goods from? Something to keep in mind, the caterer might make all the food and he might order what's important, but there's a cottage industry today of making fancy cakes and pedophiles and finger food, finger cakes that people are making all over from, the mice, and I said, come back to my party planner situation. And mice said a number of years ago, one of the mashgichim saw a couple boxes of cake that, were taken with the local vod hashgacha. And when they were opening the boxes, he asked the party planner, where are these cakes from? Now, he was familiar with five or six bakeries under this hashgacha. He worked a lot of jobs, so he knew which is which. And he saw that from her body language that she wasn't exactly answering the question. Sofo Sheldavar was that she had taken tape from that vod, from a different event. She had taken boxes from a different event of a kosher or whatever, and she put it on. She made this all in her house for this event. So you have to be careful knowing where. Sometimes they say, all the cakes, all the stuff at the Kiddush is from Chantilly. That is the name of a bakery, right? But that's the the finger cakes. What about the big fancy cakes? The big fancy cakes people are making in their houses, and you know, be careful. That's where the challah, the baked goods, from. Right? It's all the wine and bushel. Right? There's certain families that are very frum that they won't use, they have to use non-bushel wine for Kiddush. And right, so it's very nice to have those clothes, but when you have 40 Gaisha waiters there, how are you doing that?
That's what they do in Eretz Yisrael.
What?
That's the process they do in Eretz Yisrael.
So in Eretz Yisrael, the process in Eretz Yisrael doesn't work.
It works great, but then it's going to problem. They teach the guy that then they're going to touch the wine, they're going to lose their job.
Right. So in this country, I'll tell you my situation that happened by a Motzei Shabbos Shem brothers. Right? They asked the Mashgiach if they could bring in non-Mushal wine. He said, no. Our policy is, as I tell people, when someone asks about non-Mushal wine, I usually get thrown out of my supervisor's office before I get the word non out of my mouth. So he doesn't, I don't even get to the Mushal. So it's not even on the, and it's a very simple reason. Besides the, you know, the halakhic part of it, the practical part of it, what happened was that at that event, the last family member that came with a shopping bag and hid it under the table. Mashgiach chopped it, you know, later on, before they had used it, and he went over to the waitress and said, you're not allowed to touch any of the wine on the table. The waitress came down to the manager crying bitterly, what, do I have some communicable disease of some, she don't know what you did. And at the end of the day, going and explaining it, right, the halacha, if an Andrew touches it, becomes less of a use. It doesn't play well in social media or in the media. It's not, and it's not the caterer who's going to take the fall for it. It's going to be, you know, the major hashgachas that this agency has are going to leave them because they're discriminating in this way. Right, so you have to be very careful. Besides the halacha and the impracticality, you know, another agency, right, many years ago had a restaurant that tried that said they had this foolproof plan, and the agency sent someone for 3 months to test it. Each month they failed, and after 3 months they stopped it. So it's not workable. And then we used the example by the former president, you know, who has some religious children. And you can imagine coming to a table, you know, where you have, you bring this wine and he wants to see it. And he said, I'm sorry, you can't touch the bottle, sir. Go explain. Right? We love these foods, how are they heated? When stuff is heated for Shabbos morning, you have to be careful that it wasn't, that you're heating liquids on Shabbos that are not heated that way. Right? Instant tea and coffee, how are you having tea and coffee for Shabbos? Can I open the packet on Shabbos? Shechter Shalita, many years ago, when we were writing up our Shabbos guidelines, he tore like 15 in a row without tearing any letters, the sweet meal packet. So we write on our guidelines, loose powdered sweet meal should be available for those who don't want to open packets on Shabbos. Since he was able to, we're going to say it's us. Right, where's the hot water from? When you're going to a weekend bar mitzvah, simcha, 500 people, the caterer chesvens 7 cups of hot water per person. All right, so 500 times 7 in lower mathematics is 3,500 cups. All right, how are you doing that? So many places will use this, right, which has an inlet valve. So every time you take, you get more. Great. Works great during the week. Problem on Shabbos, they call that bishul. All right, so you have to be careful. You have to make sure that you have enough urns, right, the 100 cup urns, but you also have to make sure that you have the urns properly spaced. Right, you can't like unplug an urn and go plug it in somewhere else. Right? You know, that also. So you have to know where the hot water is coming from. Right, make sure it's parv. Our parva milk comes out every time. Don't squeeze the lemon. We had a, you know, you're allowed to, you know, for those who understand, right? So if you put a lemon on my fish, I can squeeze it onto the fish, but I can't squeeze it into my tea. I had a question from a caterer this past Friday. He wanted to make cups of water and put a lemon, you know, on top of the glass. And he said, no, because someone's going to go and squeeze it. And that's a problem, even though it's not his intention, but that's what you have to be careful. So a chef told us, you should have a bottle of lemon juice available for those who want lemon. Or serve tea with lemon. So it's already there. Can I cut the cake? Another beautiful poetry from Rabbi Shechter, Goyu was doing a weekend, and someone had a birthday cake, and they forgot to put the birthday cake on the, on a cookie, but it was on the happy birthday so-and-so. So we asked Shechter, what should we do? It's Friday, and we're not going to get another cake. So he writes, you know, it's a Chumrah of the Ramah, that it's Mechika, etc. So he said, you should take the cake out in front of everyone for Pirsumei Nisa, let them see it. And then after everyone wishes happy birthday, take it in the cake in the kitchen, let a guy cut it, that's a Chumrah of the Ramah. But you shouldn't do it in the future. I would say, just the beautiful poetic language of how he wrote it.
Is it a picture of pies with the same words?
Yeah.
So it, flowers.
Huh?
Flowers on the
cake. Flowers on the cake. At this point, if anyone has any questions, it's a good time to ask. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Yeah. Glasses. Yeah. Glasses and dishes that in a hotel. I go to a hotel, they have their own glasses, either a cup of coffee or even a cup of soda. Is there specifically not to use the glass?
There's a distinction between the two questions you asked. The minhag is to use for cold, use glass. Anytime you go, I'll let you in on a little secret. Anytime you're going to a hotel and they're serving you a glass with coke, water, etc., it's the hotel, it's not the caterer bringing glasses. It's great, right? It's a often array, right? On an irregular basis, even though you happen to be going to the Waldorf Astoria 4 days in a row. That's still called Bofen Aroi. It's not a regular, you know, that you're going in. But if the question comes up when you're going somewhere, you know, you're staying in a hotel for 5, 6, 7 days, right? Is that the same as being invited to 4 or 5 different sippets? Hot, I think, that's the difference.
That's glass. That's also like pottery, whatever.
No. It's only glass. Sorry. Because glass, at least, is in a category where it may not be glass. Right. Huh?
No, I'm saying I've seen stickers on, and I sent it back. I'm saying
stickers on what?
On a plate, let's say a china plate.
Yeah.
Like at a wedding, I've seen the sticker on there, and I sent it back saying
it wasn't titled.
That the dish wasn't
right. Titled. So there's a machlokes whether when the china needs to be told in the first place.
I should have been
right, should
first time I ever sent something back. Mullet.
When it comes to the coffee made. In actual allergy terms, are people that are allergic to dairy allergic to coffee made?
Yes.
Huh? Who's the doctor who said that?
I said I have some severe allergy.
Okay. Thank you. I don't play rabbi. I play rabbi, not doctor. That's why I don't want to allergy.
I was at a shamshir brought this past week.
Yeah.
So I am here because of the mashgiach who may not made. I have two disagreements with him. First thing disagreement I had was they told me that I cannot serve any milk with my chalashudas. The start time of chalashudas is about 6 hours from benching to lunch.
Okay.
So I asked them, why is it not the 6 hours from dessert?
Right.
Dessert to start, and why can't it be 6 hours from the dessert by chalashudas is where I want the milk? They didn't have a reasonable answer.
Okay.
However, the second disagreement I had with them was the caterer put on the menu that it was going to be a guacamole station where waiters were going to stand with the mortar and pestle and mash the avocado, and everybody can pick what they want in their avocado. And I think you can ask avocado and that stuff. So I asked them why that was okay.
Right?
Alicia, right? So he told me that it was miyad biyad liyad. So I asked him why he didn't go to yeshiva. Was I right for taking the avocado off the menu?
Yeah, no, avocados probably shouldn't be mashed and browned.
With the mortar.
Yes.
Dairy-free, but
when you do shot in, when can we get it? You have to
ask every time.
I'm saying, but the dairy-free is a claim. It doesn't necessarily mean that
the allergens say...
Sometimes the allergens say, sometimes the company is not so careful. And the problem is when something is labeled OUD, even if I tell you today it's dairy equipment. So some of the famous items like Oreos and Haagen-Dazs sorbets and a few of those items, so the OUD will even put it on their website that it's DE, because if they're going to change that, it's going to be Shiva Nikiyam, and they're going to sit in that, and they're not letting them do it so fast. I don't know if everyone remembers with the Stella Doro cookies. Right. When they decided that they were going to introduce a dairy equipment chocolate, they had to change all the labels to be OUD, and in the year it took them to run out of labels, it's just a concept people have to understand. You know, you hear in the belt that something's becoming kosher, and it just can't, you know, it's just, what's taking so long? One of the biggest costs of a company is the labels, right? And they'd rather wait 3 months, 6 months, and this past weekend, I'm only 25 years, when I first started was when the Three Musketeers and Milky Way and Snickers were getting an OU. And every Friday I went to shul Friday night, and I was accosted by my chaverim. When's it gonna happen? So you know, I had to adapt to the answer to them for today's world. But I said, when you and your 1 million closest friends, I will call the 800 number at the time for Eminem Mars, you'll see how fast those labels end up in a third world country. And the OU starts appearing on. You give them an order for 100 cases and 1,000 cases. You'll see how fast the OU starts appearing on the. Honestly, I said, you know, getting a million closest friends is a lot easier with Manazer than it used to be. Right. But that's something that it just happens. Until it's going to get a hashir on it. People are rushing.
Why did the OU stop?
So you're asking a very interesting question. When I first started in the OU, they never had DE. It's only in the last few years, actually, I think it started with three things. One was baby formulas, two was cereals, and three was soy milk. That Post and Kellogg's will switch to the OU. I think they allowed them to continue DE on some, you know, but only on specific, not just across the board. But they start allowing because the OU feels that people don't really know what DE means. It could mean a number of different things. In fact, I remember we had a staff meeting discussing when I think it was Isomil wanted to write made with PARV ingredients on dairy equipment. They want OU PARV with an asterisk or something because they felt that even Goyim would see OUD and run away from it because of allergens. But it was, you know, they were cleaning it out and they were boiling it out, but not at a kosher temperature. So there's nothing left, but halakhically it's still considered dairy equipment. So there was a whole discussion. I think we had two Jews, three opinions, and 40 rabbis, 45 opinions. I think that was, you know, when the OU was convinced that if the rabbis don't know exactly what dairy equipment means, how exactly is the oil gonna know what it really means. So that's you know the short answer.
Question.
Yeah.
What are the meetings like with these companies? Go back 20 years ago, and having that conversation, were they non-kosher before, or were they already kosher without realizing it?
I think you know, my best answer to that question is that, you know, when I was growing up, right, Hershey's never had an OU on their label. Right, but you know, it's Hershey, Pennsylvania, because of the Arab boycott, whatever the again, like in politics, right? Right, is that what happened that Hershey's changed their mind? Right, I mean, 20 years ago, Arab boycott was still, you know, still there. Nestle started putting an OU on their product, so nothing like competition to you know, it's sometimes a competitor doing it, so you have to keep up with it. You know, if you stop to
thinking the product.
In most cases, there was kosher. Right. Oreos and Marshall were using lard before they switched to be kosher. Yeah. Sometimes they are. But one message that I like to impart whenever I speak about conferences, let's stop for a second to think that it's nothing short of a miracle that Coca-Cola bottle has an OU on. We make up. Will be in the most generous how you describe the word Jew. We make up 1% of the population in this country. Right. That's it. The most generous.
We have Thanksgiving every week.
That's fine. That's crap. But we still only make up 1%. The fact that these major multinational companies are willing to put the simon on their product, Coca-Cola, an example. It's in front of you. Right, is nothing short of a miracle. And if you think it's not a miracle, just go to Europe for a week and see how you keep kosher. And I'm not questioning, they don't have it. They have lists and whatever to rely on. It's a different world. Right, so that's part of the, you know, your quote, 2 seconds.
you find the stuff is on items that aren't plastic bag.
Right. So the answer to that question is there are many regions of NCSY that exist because of those products, because the cost to certify them versus what they're in. But also on a more serious note, the OU tells these companies it's not required. The best example I can give you is Lipton tea, Lipton tea bags. The Lipton regular tea bags and the decaffeinated tea bags are kosher Pesach year round. Afal Pichain, Lipton insists on making a run of with an OUP. Because they say they don't want to put it on the shelf. It doesn't have a P, so someone's not going to buy it. And that's it's the same thing with Watchable. These companies, Procter & Gamble, has a lot of these plastics in it. Said whatever they can have an OU on, they want to have an OU. They think, for many companies, they think it is a badge of honor of, you know, cleaner than whatever.
One more question. Sorry. In my office, we had an office party. There's many non-Jews in the office.
Right.
There's also Yiddin.
Right.
So we told the office manager, "Should you please call the local kosher pizza shop in the five towns,
right.
The Vada of the five towns,
sure,
and they should deliver the pizza." They delivered the pizza. None of the boxes had their logo on it,
right.
or their tape on it.
What do you mean, Vinny's Pizzeria is not?
And it was a generic pizza box.
Yeah, that's it.
I think it's very common.
Said Vinny's Pizzeria.
Exactly. And so we didn't know what to do. In the meantime, the people in the office, are hungry. The Jewish woman in the office doesn't know what she did wrong.
Right.
I called the local pizza shop. I said, "I'm calling from such and such company. Can you tell me, did you in fact send a pizza?"
Yeah.
They said yes. My question is that enough of a simon? Especially you mentioned that there's a difference between Fleshix and Milfix.
After the fact, yes. That's not how it should have been done. But I'll give you a better scenario in your situation. They sent a bag of stuff, but forget that, you know, they sent deli sandwiches, but they sealed the outside package. But the secretary opened it and put it on the table for everybody. Now, this is my story, right? So the question comes up, and you know, when you're on the receiving end, you don't want to hear this answer from the Hashgacha agency. But what happens when the Olam here ordered 40 corned beef sandwiches, right? We ordered 40 corned beef sandwiches from Essen on Coney, whatever it's called today, whatever they're called, right? You ordered 40, and they came, no, you know, they came, what they did is they sealed the outside box, but the sandwiches, you know, were not sealed. And the receiver, non-Jew, who got it, opened it and put it all over the table with it doesn't say anything on it, and the tape is long gone. Right, so now you're going to come to the store and say, "Why don't you seal each individual sandwich?" So how am I supposed to? So they said back to you, "How am I supposed to know you ordered it for 40 different people? You didn't tell me. You didn't ask it." Right. So one thing is important that, you know, the consumer is always right. If you want something sealed, you want it sealed. Every individual thing sealed. Specify it. Make sure to ask for it. Don't take for granted. Especially Baruch Hashem, you know, in the coming out of COVID, people are getting busier, and Baruch Hashem, people are getting busier. Ask for it. Don't be ashamed. Don't be afraid to ask. And that's let me close, and maybe we'll dive in Marav. And then if anyone has a question, I'm not running out. So this way, anyone who feels trapped at this point doesn't feel more trapped. But let me just use the last page is constructive, right? Educated consumer is our best customer. Know the questions to ask. Don't be afraid or ashamed to ask. Don't feel like you're, you know, I appreciate when someone calls me, I'm going to a wedding by so-and-so caterer. Is everything, you know, is whose meat are they using? Whatever the question is, right? We've gone through a bunch of different questions that you could think of. Right? Ask the questions. Don't be afraid. When invited to a simpler, call the caterer and ask the questions. Call, is it, you know, whose meat are you using? It is our responsibility to be aware of what we're putting in our mouth. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. We are very fortunate to have so much kosher food. We need to demand high standards. Right? And finally, thank you for listening.
Yeah.